Welcome to the Bitcoin Consciousness Podcast. This summer, I spent some time searching internet for the terms Bitcoin and consciousness to see what I could find. And I was very surprised to find an article from 2017 that talked about Bitcoin consciousness in very similar terms as I have been basing this whole podcast. So I decided to invite the author of this article, and she turned out to be a very interesting person. So I welcome today Electric Meg. All right. It would be great if you would like to tell us about your life first. It's been many different lives in one life.
Kind of like you, it seems. It shocks me how similar we are, and I love that. I love meeting kindred spirits. I was a trumpet player for the first part of my life. I really excelled as a teenager. I played in the Youth Symphony of New York as principal trumpet player. I studied at Eastman and Berkeley during my summers of my high school, so I got really enveloped in classical and jazz music very, very strongly. And then I went to Indiana University for music education. And during that time, you know, I entered college only wanting to be a music teacher. That was the only goal that I had. But the process of being indoctrinated into the system, into the Department of Education, just, you know, I was shocked and dismayed by the level of indoctrination, by the use of psychology as a kind of a weapon for gaining acquiescence and obedience. So when I graduated, I really wanted nothing to do with teaching. And meanwhile, one of the lectures that I heard was by a guy who worked with Bush Senior when Bush was the head of the covert CIA. And this was in about 1986. And this lecture just knocked me on my back. He basically laid out what became known as Agenda 21, which is the subjugation of humanity. And he gave us a list of things to expect. And in that list was the savings and loan crisis, the crashes of Wall Street in the 90s, 9/11, the Department of Homeland Security, and then the vaccination genocide agenda. My path going forward was to like figure out, and especially as these things happened one by one, and the son, there was a Bush involved in the savings and loan crisis very blatantly. And I was on Wall Street during the crashes, and I was in New York for 9/11, and you know, it just became like, wow, you're like, this is really true. This is absolutely happening. There's an agenda, an overriding agenda. So everything in my life has been to like figure out what this is and how can we avoid it, you know? So since I didn't go into teaching, I ended up on Wall Street. A friend got me a job, and I helped basically digitize investment banks. I started off doing the digitization, but then ended up really deeply involved in graphic design, doing roadshows, special projects, teaching, like all different kinds of things on Wall Street. And I was at Goldman Sachs for probably 6 years, and I worked in every department. And I really got the insider's view of how this overriding force in the economy is ultimately extremely destructive to humanity and Earth. They have no care in the world for humanity, for anything except profit. It's all about profit. And that's even kind of like a smokescreen, because it's not really about profit, it's about control. And so, you know, here's people, you know, out of college making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and, you know, going insane, putting their whole energy into this system. And you don't realize until it's too late that you've involved yourself in something purely evil, if you ever get to that point. But I did. I before Goldman Sachs went public, I was like, you know what? I can't be on this journey anymore because I'm just seeing how ridiculously destructive it is. So I left Goldman in about 1996 and the entire investment banking industry. And I had been pursuing a music career as well in New York. And so I did a lot of touring and I got very much into composing and producing at a studio in New York City, which was an amazing experience. And my mentor was really big in, you know, he worked with Michael Jackson. He worked with everybody. He worked at all the big studios, and all those big studios were being ripped down at that point in time. So the studio where Michael Jackson did Thriller, they just ripped it down, you know, just makes no sense. But I got to, you know, see on the inside of the of, you know, from the engineering perspective, like, you know, what was going on in the music industry. And so my mentor worked at BMG, and so he, as I was kind of trying to rise in that world, he was like, you know, you have to be very, very careful about what you ask for, and you have to be very careful about what your goals are, because it's a trap. And I had seen that with many of my friends who had gotten music contracts, and then they end up realizing it's just nothing but a very high interest loan. And then they're strapped, like, you know, then, you know, it's like it all falls on your shoulders and you have to somehow make it work or not. And it's a big old trap. And it's really very, very sad. You know, it was very sad for me to see that in action. I really wanted to be like the next Chuck Mangione. And I came to a point around the same time I left Wall Street. I said, this is, the whole thing is a trap. This whole entire economy is a trap. And I became extremely disillusioned. And this is the late 90s. And the dot-com boom was happening. I got involved with some startups, you know, moving into the whole web development world. And that was exciting. I really enjoyed that. But then everything fell in, what was it, January of 2001, something like that. I mean, the economy just completely burst open. And so I was living in Newark, New Jersey at that point, and I had a loft. It was a 12,000 square foot loft, which I single-handedly converted into a artist live workspace. And so there ended up being about 9 rooms, 2 studios, and we had, you know, amazing parties there, art shows, performances, jam sessions, all kind of stuff. And I kind of subsisted in that time, just like really, really, like, you know, squeaking through. But I just did, I couldn't, it was, you know, 9/11 happened. Everything was just crazy for a long, long, long time. So I really, you know, enjoyed living in this community with artists, and allowing like really, really cheap rent. And Newark is a very interesting city. I was there for 8 years, and, you know, it was huge during the riots, the racial riots of the 1960s. And so I got to know Amiri Baraka and his son, Ross Baraka, who became the mayor of Newark. Really amazing, amazing people. And I've always been one to integrate. I spent a lot of time in the Caribbean, just as a solo female, not being afraid of Black people, you know, just like saying, let's have a conversation, you know, and I was always safe. I was always looked after. I was always welcomed, and the incredible graciousness towards me, I will always be very, very grateful for. So I studied a lot of Caribbean music, a lot of African music, which is really where my interest was. And continues to be. I consider African music in many ways to be like the soul of our world. And so Newark was kind of like that time was like a resetting for me. I had, you know, tried everything in New York City and seen how corrupt it was. And then I got really, really involved in the free jazz community in New York. And that became my savior, my passion. The whole concept of not just personal improvisation, but group improvisation, just blew my mind. There were so many sessions, and you know, I have people listen to my music sometimes and say, well, that's a wonderful composition. I'm like, that's not a composition, that's group improvisation. But it's the high level of people being able to communicate in this language then sounds composed. And that realization, just like after all the training I had at all the schools of, you know, theory and history and everything, like it came down to the fact that this group improvisation becomes the tool for the new form of expression. And jazz really, to me, in so many ways, is the music of liberation. And so I just, I got very involved with the Vision Festival. I did a lot of engineering for them and promotion. And it's a very, probably one of the best known free jazz or, you know, whatever you want to call this music. The concept of improvisation and high level creativity, you know, the Vision Festival is a wonderful organization. And I toured I worked extensively with a guitarist named On Davis, and I went to Sardinia with him to play with him and also with Butch Morris, which was just a phenomenal experience. And Butch had pioneered this form of music called conduction, where it's just a new form of composition, you know, and that whole entire experience, like just again, like, you know, elevated me so very much. I had a couple brain injuries, so I had to stop playing trumpet, but I've been very, very heavily involved in composing and producing and writing and becoming a multimedia artist. So I'm a videographer. I put together a show called Language of Water, which is talking about the quantum aspects of water. There's so much about water that we don't know. I've been living in a place called White Sulphur Springs since 2008. And the water here is absolutely tremendous. And so I would just get lost in the forest and follow the water and photograph it. And I got all these messages. It was communicating with me. And it was like, it took me years to accept that the water was trying to communicate with me. But it did. And I then put this show together. It was initially a one-woman show that I took out and performed in the local galleries. And then I've turned it into a movie, and I want to turn it into a book. And that was another, you know, like I love being able to translate information. But I think, you know, as to the point of this podcast, when I left Goldman, I was so disillusioned with the economy. I just saw the horror of it. And I was horrified by what was happening every time I spent a dollar. And the faces of the children and the mothers in Central America who were being obliterated through the policies of the huge corporations, the telecoms, the oil companies, who just had not one care for their lives. It forced me to exit from the economy. And so since the late 90s, I have lived extremely simply and have been searching for what is the answer, what is the alternative. And as the digital economy came online, I did a lot of research, and I found that so much of business is built on the seven vices: sloth, greed, jealousy, avarice, you know, the very lowest frequency actions of humanity, which I now consider to be the element of third dimension, you know. And so during this time, I read a book, it came out in the early 2000s, called The Seven Graces of Marketing by Lynn Serafin. And I got to know Lynn quite well. We did a lot of work together, and this changed my mind. This is such a beautiful concept for the world. So what if we start doing business from higher perspective, higher calling? And I was still in Newark when Bitcoin came out, and I was aware of it. But I was a new mother, And I couldn't, before we moved up here to the mountains, I just couldn't get to, I couldn't find the information I needed to go and buy some Bitcoin. I knew it was going to be huge. I had no doubt in my mind. But there was an exchange down on Wall Street, and I couldn't find it, you know? And nevertheless, I mean, you know, this was even before Mt. Gox and all the crazy, crazy exchanges. The whole concept of exchanges with Bitcoin has just been, people have lost so much money. I wonder how many people who owned Bitcoin in 2008 actually kept it through all of those scenarios, you know? So I followed Bitcoin, and I ended up getting in when it started rising. So I bought it at about like 3,000. And so then I went really, really, really deep into this. I was like, well, this could be brilliant, you know, this could be, equitable. This could be, you know, the answer to so many problems. And having traveled around the world, I know that everywhere except the United States, cell phones are huge. The telecommunication is huge. When I go to Morocco, my ex-partner is Moroccan. I spent a lot of time in Morocco. The technology for cell phones is so far advanced from the United States. It's crazy. Just so many more options and so much more. So I realized that in Africa, cell phones are huge. People can take a cell phone and they can do anything. This could be a fantastic way to create equity in finances. So I really got into studying Bitcoin, and I also got involved in a startup, a crypto startup called Digital World Exchange. And I was heavily involved in that for about 3 or 4 years. The overriding concept was to create a gold-backed cryptocurrency system, which I realized at that point, like, that's really where it all has to go. I mean, unless it's backed by a commodity of some sort or another, it has no value. And Bitcoin has the value of being the first, of having the white paper, the original white paper. But ultimately, it's built on limitation. There's only ever going to be 21 million coins. And that's almost irrelevant because, you know, no matter how high Bitcoin goes, the limitation becomes irrelevant because anybody can own a piece of it and it can be worth whatever value. So over the course of time, especially these past few years, I've, you know, released myself from, I don't know what you call it, but the, you know, I'm no longer a huge fan of cryptocurrencies because unless it's backed by something of value, you know, we've seen with all the scams that it always returns to zero. Now, I just heard yesterday that JP Morgan basically owns Ethereum. So the concept of the smart contracts, I love it. You know, it's fantastic. You've got these immutable ledger where you can never go back and change anything, which is one of the huge problems in the financial system is just the non-transparency. So I recognize and honor that value of an immutable ledger. And of course, the whole concept of decentralized is absolutely vital to our future. But there's no privacy. There's no such thing as privacy on a blockchain. And the very word crypto itself, you know, ostensibly was put forth as a means of security, right, by McAfee, but it means death. It literally represents death. So here we are right now at a crossroads where, yes, the world is going to a gold-backed economy. There's no doubt about that at this point in time. Zimbabwe, just last week, released it gold coins. You know, they lose $100 million a month in people taking gold out of their country. So distribution of gold coins has been a fantastic, fantastic innovation. And the return to the gold standard, I think, in many ways, is going to be really, really great, but it matters. Everything comes down to whether or not we have control of our funds or if somebody else has control of these funds. And this is ultimately the fundamental issue of economy. Like, do people have control of their funds? So this is where we're at, and it's not clear. It is not yet clear if we are going to an economy that empowers humanity or enslaves humanity. With all my research, I mean, I follow so many different people. You know, I'm a really big believer in Selber at this point in time. And I've spent a lot of my life energy promoting volunteerism, community building, farming, being responsible for yourself, being self-responsible, you know, whether it's for your health or your food or your children or whatever it is. You know, I'm a very huge proponent of that. And I don't know yet. It's just not clear if this new economy is empowering or enslaving. And that's a very difficult place to be for me personally, and I think for humanity. And it's all happening in the next couple of months. There's no doubt about it at this point in time. It's shifting. Gold plays the major role, but does a gold-backed economy that is using blockchain technology empower or enslave? And this is what we have yet to learn. You know, the fact that the big banks are all involved in it. You know, when XRP came out, it was launched as the bank coin, as a centralized bank coin, and now they say it's gold backed. So, what's a gold backed centralized bank coin? You know, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Okay. So that's where we are right now.
Yeah. So let me go back to the article you wrote back in 2017. I mean, you were researching Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And I want to read an excerpt here. And I will post a link to the whole article in the show notes. But this is how it says. So Bitcoin exists on a very high level of consciousness. It was created to circumvent the most evil, greedy, anti-human institutions that exist, and to empower the 99% as a reaction to the stock market crash of 2008. It was created on a solid foundation of trust, security, and a free and open exchange of information and IDs. Yeah, that's my favorite part of the article.
Well, that's what the white paper says, right? That's exactly what the white paper says.
Yes, and we can approach this rationally. And many, many podcasts out there talk about Bitcoin and the markets and the macro in a rational way. In this podcast, we are more going into like intuitive feeling with our hearts. We can rationally research, we can listen to what experts say, but if we only use our rational mind, it's easy to get lost. So we also have this intuitive sense. And this is how Bitcoin made sense to me. And this text that I just read now, it's very similar to what I experienced intuitively with Bitcoin. And it has proven in these last 13 years that it is truly decentralized and nobody can stop it. Nobody can hack it. And it is created out of very selfless love of one individual, the creator, who created something he really wanted, like you say in the text. He wanted to circumvent the most evil and greedy anti-human institutions. And he did it the best way he could by spreading the nodes around the world so that it cannot be taken. And from my point of view, it still works. It works as he intended it to work. But it seems you have changed your mind a little bit since you wrote this. So when did you start doubting the trueness and the purity of Bitcoin?
Well, let me just say that there is genius. I mean, it is genius. I'm not disputing that at all. The reason that I have changed my mind is because, first of all, there's several reasons. The energy usage that's needed for Bitcoin is equivalent to the output of the country of Ireland. It's extremely energy greedy.
But isn't this worth decentralization? If you see the fiat system and how much pain it's causing, generations by generation by generation, isn't this a small price to pay to get a fair system on the earth?
You know, because I'm seeing the repercussions of it at a local level, I have to say, why replace one bad thing with another? Just very, you know, now that being said, the future cryptocurrencies do not have this energy hog mentality. It's much simpler. So they did what they could with what they had at the time. So it is what it is. You know, I'm just saying that it's really bad. I mean, the problem of the energy usage of the mining machines is really, really bad. Now, another thing is that evil people have taken over the mining operation. The vast majority of mining is done by, like, you know, people who are using the money for evil, you know, and it's really, you can't just buy a machine and start Bitcoin mining right now. You know, it's like, it's the competition is just too extreme. So, but there's the other thing is there's several things about it. If you look from a kind of like a grand perspective, to where we are right now, whether we're going to empowerment or enslavement has yet to be seen. If we go to enslavement, it's because they introduced Bitcoin as a digital currency. And so they're trying to condition us to the concept of digital currencies, not owning cash. When we no longer have cash, when all of our economy is digital, we have no more power. They have the power to cut us off at any point in time, which we're seeing in China. And it doesn't even have to be a cryptocurrency. It can be just your digital bank account, right? But the concept of going digital is giving the control to others. So my approach at this point in time is like, what, you know, it's all about what's the value? Like, what is value? And so say the value of one Bitcoin is $60,000, you know, like on what basis, you know, I mean, it just scarcity, you know, literally. But what's the value of a peach or a loaf of bread or a full tank of gasoline? You know, what are the things that we need in our daily life to be able to survive? And if you don't have access to your digital account, you can't survive. And so it's the control mechanism that I ultimately have a problem with. And whether it's decentralized or centralized is almost irrelevant. If they have the power to cut off your account or hold your account, then we are not free. Humanity is not free. And you can hold your Bitcoin in a ledger, but can you then go spend it? I mean, like, you know, so I just got myself completely out of cryptocurrencies last week. And I sold my coin for Ethereum, paid that fee, and then had to move my stuff to Coinbase to cash out to the dollar. They charged me $75 to cash out of Bitcoin. And to me, that is just like rapacious, you know, and the Lightning Network is supposed to make those fees, you know, quick and fast, but that was not my experience. So somebody needs to talk to Coinbase about that.
Okay, Coinbase is famous for not supporting Bitcoin. They support the altcoins. So they are one of the last exchanges that they haven't installed the Lightning Network, which is very strange.
Yeah.
So you're unfortunate to have Coinbase there.
Well, we don't have any options. There's in the United States, there are no options. There's no
Kraken.
Place.
Kraken is a very big exchange and they use Lightning.
Okay. Well, I can't connect Kraken to my bank account. So Coinbase becomes the only way to really cash out, you know. So in any case, Coinbase is government, you know. I mean, and so to, in a way, Coinbase is kind of like an example of the control mechanism, you know. And so I look at all the stuff, and I analyze the control, and I've seen how anything that really is truly supposed to be empowering for the people, for the currency owner in this country, and maybe it's not true around the world, but in the United States, is compromised, is given over to control mechanisms, you know. And maybe that means that the rest of the world is way advanced from the United States. You know, I hope that that's what that means. But this country is, you know, they do not want people empowered with money in any way. And there many, 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 many millionaires and billionaires have been made off of Bitcoin, which is a wonderful thing. And many of those people have done fantastic things with it. And that makes me so happy. It makes me so happy. And likewise with all, Ethereum and Litecoin and all the originals and all the new ones. You know, I did very well with Digital World Exchange when that coin was still in operation. And I actually developed I was teaching people how to get into cryptocurrencies and teaching them how to make transactions and how to hold, you know. I mean, that became one of the things that I did. It's like I was so thrilled about cryptocurrencies. Like, let me help you understand this new economy that's emerging, you know.
Okay, so
So.
let me answer some of these accusations on Bitcoin. Because first of all, it's many of the things about centralization and Coinbase and so on. This is what the Bitcoiners talk about also. So actually you're very similar to, it's just that the Bitcoiners take it another way and they think, how can we make it more private? How can we make it more secure? So we have Bitcoin companies that are creating, we have the satellite system specially made for Bitcoin. Many Bitcoiners have their own satellite dish, even if the government would shut down electricity or internet or whatever, we are still able to communicate with the Bitcoin network through the satellites. So that's one question out of the equation. We have thousands of people working on this because they really believe in Bitcoin and the individual sovereignty. And they are talking about the same things that you are, but they are actually working to find a solution for it. So then you have with the privacy, and it's many companies that work with coin joins and similar coin mixings. So what you do if you want to have private coins, just send them there, pay a few sats, and it's mixed with hundreds of people around the world, and you get it back. And then they are untraceable, for example. So people who care about privacy, they can do it in those kind of ways.
Well, that's Monero, right? That's how Monero works.
Monero is another coin. I was talking about Bitcoin.
Right, but that Monero pioneered that concept of the pool, you know. And I'm not convinced that I'm not convinced that the privacy is actually true. But I love it. And yes, there are the concept of sovereignty. Financial sovereignty, you know, specifically, is the conversation. It really is the conversation. So continue, because I'm learning a lot here. This is wonderful.
Yeah, so when I went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, I found these spiritual warriors in the Bitcoin community. Even if they don't communicate with higher beings and so on, they're really fighting for the human spirit. And they do it through code and they connect with each other and they do it on the dark web. Doesn't mean that it's illegal or doesn't mean that it's bad, but it's just they want privacy. So they communicate on the dark web and they create solutions. How can I keep my property or my Bitcoin safe? And how can I have them safe even whatever the government do? So they are like following in Satoshi's footsteps and trying to improve his dream with different apps and communities. And so when I found that as a spiritual person, I was blown away because they do it not to earn money like on Wall Street, but they really do it for good reasons. And they are working, you know, 20 hours per day or whatever, because they really work with their hearts. Many of them say, maybe Bitcoin is not going to save us, but it's a dream worth fighting for. So they can see many of the risks and problems. But similar to you, it's like it's a centralized dystopian future, or it's a decentralized renaissance. And when they have that option, first maybe they get worried and depressed, but then they just say, I will spend my days making sure that it will be the decentralized world in the future. So they're like a big army, love army. So this is my experience from coming into the Bitcoin community.
I that's so beautiful. And I've had, you know, I would say limited contact with them, I think because I got so involved with the OneCoin, and I really got out of the Bitcoin in 2017, 2018. But I just have to say that aside from that, it has also been used for such evil. And when I look at Puerto Rico, what happened was that guy, Brock Pierce, I think his name was, made a fortune on Bitcoin. And he went down when Puerto Rico was ravaged by a hurricane, and he bought up all the prime land. And he's a pedophile and complete asshole, and destroyed that island, like destroyed the quality of life for Puerto Ricans single-handedly, one person with his army, you know, his sycophant army. And so that's just one example of,
yeah, I can say that he is not popular at all in the Bitcoin community. So he tried to do something similar with El Salvador, you know, so he called himself the Bitcoin delegation. He's set up the meeting with the presidents and stuff. And then these true Bitcoiners, these love warriors, as I say, they sort of came and just kicked him out.
Yeah, so, but I mean, there's people like that who, you know, they're cabal. I mean, like he's cabal, and so you know, we always have to fight that. There's always this element of evil that wants to destroy the element of good, and so, you know, here we are as the light warriors, the people who have the vision to be able to envision the future, you know, and all I can say is kudos to the people who remain with Bitcoin and trying to make it a force of equality or equity or whatever the proper term is, to make sure that everybody is empowered, you know, not just the few. And, you know, so I don't have my own satellite. I don't have the ability to mine. I mean, the costs of electricity have just like probably quintupled this year where I live. And, it remains like the choice few who have access to be able to study and implement whatever these positive changes are, you know, until such time as things switch over.
It's also very popular, what they call Bitcoin citadels. And it's like communities all over the world where they have a satellite and things like this. So if things get really rough,
the citadel remains strong. Serbia is, was it Serbia or Croatia? Croatia is really, really big in that, if I remember correctly.
I know about one such community in Croatia, yes.
They actually, Croatia was giving people a 6 month, like you can come into Croatia for 6 months on a visa and just do whatever you want to do, which is like unheard of, you know, in order to help bring people with cryptocurrency consciousness into that country, you know, which I thought was really amazing, really, really brilliant. There's so many positives to the concept of what cryptocurrencies can be. You know, I've experienced a lot of the scam elements of it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's huge, and it's very, I mean, you know, people, they've been able to weaponize psychology to in so many ways, not just politically, but also with economics, to scam your money from you. And I consider myself a pretty smart person, and but I'm also an idealist. And so, like, people who are idealists, kind of, I think, maybe get scammed more than others. But I want to see innovation where there really is the possibility for everybody to be empowered. And, you know, we're in a mess, in chaos in this world right now, politically and economically and health-wise and every different way. And I'm not just waiting for something to come through and present itself as an answer, but I'm actively involved in that, as you are, you know. Like, what is the most beautiful possible future for everybody, for every human, every animal, every plant on this earth? And I don't know what that answer is yet. I hope it's not something that's a cryptocurrency. You know, the cabal is pushing the central bank digital currencies, that's known as CBDCs. And they are just an extension of the central banks, and not going to empower anybody. It just remains just a further layer of control. And that's really what is being pushed at this moment. And by the end of the year, something is going to break through. And whether we're able to push through our own answer, whether Bitcoin is that little aspect of sovereignty that we're able to retain while they push through their next level of control, I hope it's true. You know, I imagine very much that the future is these series of communities around the world, whether it's a citadel or whether it's a farming community or an educational community or whatever it is. We're seeing that rise in the United States like crazy in the past 2 years. And I've been very much involved in developing localized communities. The single thing that is always true is people's egos will destroy something before it ever rises to fruition. I mean, the concept of ego, I mean, the third dimension is so rooted in the ego, and people cannot get beyond it. It's like always, you know, we've been conditioned about what about me? What about mine? What about, you know, what I need? And what about my experience? And until we're able to somehow mitigate that very third dimensional aspect and really recognize the God within us and the fact that we are not separate, we are a unified consciousness, this is where the change has to come from, in my opinion. You know, and it has increasingly been true that more and more people are becoming conscious in this way, of recognizing that God is everywhere. I mean, every aspect of life is a facet of God. And this is what I hope to see more. This is what I'm doing with all of my work, and creating educational courses and helping to build communities. It's like the minute that somebody returns to the lower frequency of the seven vices and the ego is when things really, 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 really break down. So perhaps the question is, how can we get more and more people into higher levels of consciousness as fast as possible? And what role does Bitcoin or XRP or silver or volunteering or growing your own food, you know, like what role does that play in elevating the consciousness? Because it has to be, the elevation of consciousness has to be priority in every aspect of how we are changing society. if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's really obvious in the Bitcoin community how being a Bitcoiner do this to people. It's many podcasts exploring why, but it's a strong trend that anyone who becomes a Bitcoiner, because they take responsibility for their money, the next step is to take responsibility for their health and for their environment. So it's this positive spiral of responsibility when they become Bitcoiners. And then they come usually into mental health. So it's like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's like you start with the, okay, I have my foundation. What's next? What can I take responsibility for next? And then they go into mental health and they drop addictions. You know, we have communities online, like Bitcoiners dropping addictions, and they get together and they just do it together. They're strong because they see it's just because of the fiat culture, the fiat system that they were stuck in it from the first place. Mm-hmm. So they say, oh, let's free the money, but let's also free ourselves and our health. And then my podcast is then the next layer. When you go through health, you go through the basic needs, and then you start coming into self-actualization. And that's when you start coming into, oh, I have a soul also. Who am I? Like, who am I behind all this programming that was indoctrinated in school? And that's my focus in this podcast. And Bitcoiners come and they start to become interested in this as a result of holding Bitcoin. That's the theory in the Bitcoin community. And then sometimes I sort of push this a little bit and I say, no, it's just the consciousness of the planet rising and you happen to be a Bitcoiner and it's just everybody's consciousness are rising at this time. But I think still that they have a point that Bitcoin, individual sovereignty, taking responsibility, that it's really building this momentum for people to find themselves ultimately and take control of their lives.
Mm-hmm. And that plays into a much larger movement, you know. So, you know, I have to say, I really don't know many people who own Bitcoin at this point in time. I mean, I've been very involved in the crypto world. I mean, everybody I know has gotten out of crypto completely. So I'm not familiar with that movement, but I love it. I love that you're teaching me about how this is developed. What I can say is that through politics, through the changes in politics, kind of new growth of political consciousness, not just, I mean, so if you want to call it patriots, it's not just an American thing, it's a global thing. You know, it's people who are coming together, rejecting the control ideologies of the elite and recognizing and realizing that there is this higher consciousness. I have not seen that in the crypto world. I've missed out on that flow, you know. I'm not saying it's not there at all. I'm just saying that I've seen it through politics, through the drastic changes that they are attempting to force on society, which includes economics. And because I'm in a very low population density place, helped myself to grow and helped my community to grow by doing things on the ground, boots on the ground, and have tried to teach people about getting into cryptocurrencies and realize that, you know what? The vast majority of people will not change until change is forced upon them. So it for me, it's been like, you know, aligning with a very few people. Like there's a particular one family who emigrated here from Russia, a Jewish family, who started a raw food store promoting raw food nutrition, which I said, this is beautiful. And it turns out they're really involved in the Anastasia movement and just have like, you know, as a family have created a whole new movement and community based on self-responsible nutrition, you know? This is what it takes, you know? So this whole concept of self-responsible is fifth dimensional. It is the higher consciousness. And I am 100% invested in that. I just sent my son to college and realizing, I mean, I know full well that college is a ridiculous thing to invest in at this point in time. But he wants to be a doctor. And I have, he's my son. He was raised with this consciousness. And he's going to be one to go and implode it from the inside out, you know, like Neo. Sometimes you have to involve yourself with the enemy in a way, you know, so to speak. You have to be out there. I personally have a very difficult time dealing with people who are of lower vibration. They, you know, it's very difficult for me. So I have to kind of stay with the people of consciousness. And that's where I am comfortable. That is where I'm most empowered. And, you know, now really involved in raising the next generation of homeschoolers to be able to make, you know, to have the skill of critical thinking, be able to study, to be able to find your value, and to be able to communicate with integrity and intelligence, and most importantly, just make great decisions. Make the best decision for yourself and for your family and for your community. And it's a big web. The whole thing is a big, huge spider web with all these different aspects to it. And I'm thrilled to learn that in the Bitcoin community, that exists also. It's not my experience. My experience is with the people like Brock Pierce, but it makes me so happy to know that there is this beautiful, beautiful community. And I will actually now go out and search it out and find out where these communities might be existing in the United States. You know,
I can help you. I can
well,
send
thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you.
People.
Because when you combine that with the community farms that are cropping up and the community schools that are cropping up, that is the empowerment right there. That is 100% the most beautiful future as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so in the Bitcoin community, it's very strong, this homeschooling or unschooling mm-hmm. or world schooling, you know, when they're traveling mm-hmm. around. Mm-hmm. It's very popular and growing your own food. And so it's all of these healthy trends are promoted. So it's very similar to what you're saying. So I think you would find many like-minded people in the community.
Thank you. Thank you. It's kind of interesting how, you know, my experiences of the scammers, you know, it's like really, really threw me off. I mean, it's just, you know, overall, I have made so much more money in the cryptocurrency world than probably any other thing in my life. But the scammers are so bad. They're so bad. And
again, the Bitcoiners are famous for being so aggressively pointing out the scammers because they want to help beginners. Because if you're just a beginner coming into the space, then the scammers come there and try to.
Mm-hmm.
So many Bitcoiners, they spend 1, 2, 3 hours a day just trying to help people to avoid those traps in different
mm-hmm.
ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they are sometimes called toxic.
Yeah,
because they're saying, don't do that, but they're trying to help in their way, because many of them have been through that. Many Bitcoiners was scammed, and that's sort of how they learn.
I think it's a part of the process. Yeah,
and that's why they are trying to help. And but when I see it, I see love. But when someone else see it, they can see hate. Maybe, why are you so against?
Or just greed?
Because they know
so much as greed.
That it's just this. They know that these rug pulls that they call it, right? So they just hype. They pay celebrities to put something on Instagram, and then their followers buy it, and they just pump up the price, and then the founders sell their part, right? And it just mm-hmm. crashes, and this happens over and over and over again. It's a jungle, similar to spirituality. It's also a jungle with many gurus
sure
and
That's
many
right.
teachers. So both of those areas can be tricky to get into.
Well, but at the same time, it all leads to not just self-responsibility, but discernment. The ability to have higher levels of discernment, to know through your heart what is true and what is not true. And I have found it to be almost perfect. The more I develop that, the more I am able to know instantly what is right or wrong. And, with my journey, I now have, a lot of 5D capabilities, telepathy, just inner knowing, and the ability to know which way to go, whether it's physical on a road or through paths of knowledge. I have such a high level of trust in my inner knowing at this point in time. It's like all the proof I need to know for myself of how amazing this journey is, and how what incredible things await us as we get to those higher levels, And I know that you're familiar with the Hawkins scale of consciousness, which is one of the things that I use as a daily tool for myself and also in my teaching. And we're always fluctuating between higher and lower levels on the scale. Love is what, halfway up. So you get to the point of gratitude and forgiveness. You're only just scratching the surface of what's possible, but those are the techniques that we use to escape from the seven deadly sins, the very 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 low frequencies. And ultimately, the truth is, money is irrelevant in the grand universal scheme of things. There is no such thing as money. It doesn't exist. It's a tool, and it's on Earth, it is an enslavement tool. It is a very consciously and intentionally put there as a tool of enslavement. So I'm really ultimately looking to the time when money is a thing of the past. And that's what I look forward to. I don't know if I'm going to see it in my lifetime, but the concepts of free energy, whether you're looking at Tesla or Schaberger or Reif or Reich or any of the amazing inventors whose work has been silenced in the past 100 years, that is all coming out right now. And the minute that we have free energy, money is irrelevant, It's irrelevant. And so it's really all just a tool to get us to that point. And then we have to demand it. We have to demand free energy. It has existed for so long. Anti-gravity, was not just, Schauberger invented anti-gravity. He discovered it in like 1920. So the minute that we demand everything that has been kept from us, the whole concept of money goes away. You could have a little tiny unit the size of your hand that powers your entire life, And literally the air and the space of your thumb is enough energy to empower your whole life, So this stuff already exists. It's already there. And we as humans need to rise in unity to learn about it, be self-responsible enough to learn what is already there, and then demand that it is released to us. And honestly, there's no need for money. There's replicators exists, and med beds exist, and there's not going to be any illness in the future, and there's not going to be any lack doesn't exist in the future. And so we need to go from changing from the mindset of lack to the mindset of abundance. And so I guess part of that realization is why I have exited the whole cryptocurrency thing in one way. I continue to live very simply. My life is my creativity. And I love photography, and I love videography, and I love writing, and I love making music, and I love conversations. And this is what has value to me in my life. And being able to sift all the information that I get from all of my research into little nuggets that can help people to rise out of the lower frequencies and realize that they're connected to God, and that that is infinite potential right there. Just that one thing alone is infinite potential. And in this country, there's the liberals are having a massive backlash against anything that mentions God. It's a dirty word now in this country. It's like you're evil if you mention God. And I'm like, how did we get here? You know, how did we get here? And of course, the word God is, can be interpreted so many different ways. So whether you call it source or divinity or Yahweh or Jehovah or Krishna or whatever, it's the aspect of love, and in direct opposition to the aspect of evil, so where evil is death, evil is limitation, evil is control, and then the opposite of that is independence and infinite abundance and health and community and love, it's ultimately so simple. And we're headed toward that time, I think, in the not too distant future, where we are able to disengage the clutches of evil and the control that they put on money and return to abundance. Because I think we were there before. And I think that we were just indoctrinated. But we look at Chaka Khan and Miles Davis. They, despite being Black African Americans with all of the, and Ornette, and Dizzy, all of the pressures that were placed on their lives, they were able to tap into that brilliance, that inner God brilliance, and bring to life the extraordinary work that they did. And that is there for every one of us. And they're our teachers. If they can do it, we can do it. Okay, maybe Miles' father was a doctor, so he had, some advantages, whatever. But, look at there's so many people who have come up from nothing. One of my great collaborators in the 90s was a guy named Kid Lucky, who innovated beatboxing into a thing called beat rhyming. He came from the foster system. All right. So he was given up for adoption, never adopted, went through the American foster care system, which is a horror story. What they do is they rape you and they ply you with drugs and they tell you you're worthless. And if you make it out alive, good on you. And so he made it out alive, and then he somehow realized that he was infinite consciousness and did magnificent things before he died of pancreatic cancer a few years ago. And so no matter who you are, no matter where you are, no matter what your life story, when you stop identifying with your experience and start identifying with your divinity, that's when the great stuff happens. That's when it all happens. I hope that Satoshi Nakamoto used that consciousness to create Bitcoin. I hope, and I'm not convinced of it, but I hope sincerely that that is the consciousness that created Bitcoin. And even if it's not, as you're telling me, every one of us can use our consciousness to change the path of something from negative to positive. And maybe that's the greatest work that there is being able to transmute. If the very concept of money itself is evil and in control, how do we transmute that to infinite possibility?
I don't know Satoshi Nakamoto personally, obviously, but I do know a lot of Bitcoiners. And in their mind, he did it out of goodness, right? And then when they believe that, that's the direction of their life. So in some level, it doesn't even matter why Satoshi did it or not, because it's bringing together all of these people that want to work for a better world. And then that's the positive force. And that's why I like to be in it, because it's not like people complaining of inflation and just talking about all the problems. No, they're just like, okay, I see the problems. Let's work on the solution. So that's why I love Bitcoiners so much. So we're coming towards the end. Is it anything you feel that we haven't mentioned yet? Something you had in mind when you prepared in your mind for this conversation?
All I can say is that I've really enjoyed this conversation so much. I've learned a lot, so thank you so much for that. I feel a little bit revitalized. I'm at a huge juncture in my life right now with my son flying the nest. And so maybe I'll get back into Bitcoin. Maybe I'll search out the citadels and see how they're integrating with the work that I've been doing these past couple of years, you know, and maybe that'll be a huge turn in my life, you know. So thank
you,
Sama.
It will be an honor to help you to connect with some of these people that I speak so highly of, so you can see them for yourself and maybe even meet them for yourself, since mm-hmm. you're in America.
Yeah.
And we're coming past that first way when it looks like they're just in it for the money and for the riches and the cars, and just looking past that when you see that they're really working tirelessly for a better world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is exactly what I do. So
yeah,
that similar consciousness is already there. So it will be beautiful. Maybe that's exactly where my tribe is in Bitcoin. And I didn't know it all this time.
Well, your background sort of hints to it. Actually, two episodes ago, I did it with one young woman. She also worked in Goldman Sachs on Wall Street for 6 years or something like that. And then she had a spiritual awakening. She traveled around the world. And then she started an investment firm just focusing on Bitcoin companies who wants to create a better world.
Wow.
So she's like spiritual. And she sees that she wants to help by finding investors and investing in those people that are doing the best.
Wow.
Job.
Absolutely wonderful. That's the best it can possibly be. That is perfection.
Yeah, so maybe listen to that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much for taking the time. It's so interesting to talk with you. And
likewise, yeah.
Hear about your life and all of your discoveries. And we will be in touch, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sam.